I had a dream. I had a dream that I was in prison. I had a dream that I was in prison and I ran with a gang of poets. And all the other gangs were afraid to say our names, would do everything they could to maintain their distance, although resistance was futile. And they would kill each other and assault each other, but considered our truths too hostile. They didn't want us to take away the cartons of low self-esteem that society gave them, because that was all they had. And when they saw us walking down the block, they would dip in their cells. They'd rather dwell in that hell than face the heaven that we were speaking. They would rather see a fellow inmate's blood leaking than have us reach into their heart. Even though all we ever said was that we loved them and wanted to save them, but every jewel we gave them just made them fear us more. And in the mess hall, they would rather gang war than sit at our table, even though we carved right in it that none of us were better and we were all up in this hell together. And what was most important is that we posed a united front in front of the COs and the warden. And although the poets might have known a little bit more about our oppression, we were all caught in the belly of the beast. But then I noticed that the ones who listened were the other poets and the ones who needed to hear us the least. So we started flying these kites called heat. And we told them each one teach one and each one reach one, because the place where we're from is the place where God lives. So they started a rumor that the poets had the mark of the Most High on our eyelids. And poets started buying into it and getting all egotistical and believing that they were better than the other convicts. So I took it for as long as I could, and then I stood in the middle of the cell block and I yelled out, "Whenever I write, I try to make sure that I give insight and vision." And I looked around and noticed that the ones who needed to hear me the most wouldn't listen. The ones who needed to hear me the most could not listen. It was like the ones who needed to hear me the most didn't listen. And that's when I woke up this morning and realized that I actually do live in that very prison.
Welcome one, welcome all. This is the Next Step Radio Show on the Antimatter Zone Radio Network. I am your host, Jacob Appleman. If you'd like to reach me, my email address, thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. That is thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. Check out my website, www.infowarts.com. That's infowarts.com. Thank you for joining us today on episode number 14. It's going to be a fantastic Friday. We're going to work on a solution today along the mindset of how to think and how to have discernment. The topic in general, we're going to discuss video, fake video, and can you trust video? I remember being a teenager, watching the Super Bowl one year. I forget what year and who was playing. But there was a commercial at halftime, and this was during the time where Christopher Reeves, the actor who played Superman, had fallen off a horse, and now he was in a wheelchair. Well, in this particular commercial, Christopher Reeve gets up and starts walking around. I even forget what they were advertising. But I clearly remember at that point, wow, that's some good computer graphics. They faked that video rather well. And then it occurred to me, but didn't sink in really at that point, that, you know, video from here on out may not be evidence. You know, that they took a guy who's crippled and computer graphically generated an image of him standing up, and it looked really convincing. You know, movies previously and TV shows previously to that point, anytime they faked something, you know, laser beams or spaceships or big giant monsters, you know, the discerning eye could always tell it was fake. It was pretty easy to spot the manipulation. But once I saw that commercial, I thought to myself, man, they're getting really good at this. It's going to be really hard to use video as proof anymore. They could CGI anybody doing anything, and, you know, most of the people would just buy it. Well, I put that aside, you know, continued living. And here we are in the YouTube generation, you know, the video on demand generation. You can watch anything you want on your cell phone instantly. And it's quite something to behold, because with this influx of information, we, on the surface level, think, oh, wow, look how much smarter we are. You know, at the push of a button, I can look up almost anything. There's a downside to that. Now we have to be extra cautious and extra discerning, because you can't really trust video. You know, that's not to say all videos are fake. That's not to say all videos are real. We need to now, instead of saying, wow, I saw it on X, Y, or Z, to just putting that in our memory bank, holding that as a possibility. You know, this could be real, this could not be real. And just start collecting video evidence as that. You know, just pieces of the puzzle. Because, you know, like I said, at this point, it's going to be really hard to tell who's doing what to who. And Jeffrey Grupp, and I suggest everybody go subscribe to his subscription show at antimatterradio.com, did, you know, a discussion a few shows back about the video anomalies of the airplanes on 9/11. You know, it appears lots of clips don't have a plane in it, and we've all seen the clips that have planes in it. You know, so both could be true, neither could be true, a little some of this. You know, where are we at with video evidence? And today we're going to go over just a few current examples to point out the different kinds of fake video. You know, they can take real video and add something to it to discredit it. They can take fake video, add something real to it to confuse people. They could put out different versions of the same video to get us infighting. You know, there's lots of tactics with fake video that can be used, and we're going to go over just a few examples. Now, the first video I want to play for you in audio format is it's a pretty well-known, famous YouTube video, or it's on YouTube. And if you haven't seen it, the title of the one I'm looking at and I'm going to play is called Congress Passes H.R. 8791.
Congress shall now vote for approval of H.R. 8791, the Homeland Terrorism Preparedness Bill. Said bill requests emergency response funding up to and including, I'm sorry, this section is classified, dollars to prepare for a national level terrorist attack and or attack from classified. Funding for first responder personnel and vehicles would be doubled if said attack leads to more than 80% of national population being affected by classified. This funding shall commence in conjunction with the first attack on classified, or the first large-scale outbreak of classified, dependent upon which comes first. Civilian and military units shall be trained in containment and combat of classified, including irradiated classified, with possibility of classified airborne, classified flesh-eating, classified, and or all of the above, in such event as classified spewing, classified escape, are released or otherwise become uncontrollable. Air Force units may also be directed to combat said classified due to their enormous size and otherworldly strength. Should event occur in urban areas, that's classified, far surpassing our darkest nightmares. Should casualties exceed classified, body disposal actions shall be halted and associated resources shall be reallocated to classified underground, classified protected birthing centers. A new Bill of Rights shall be drafted and approved by classified. Having now reviewed the bill, I ask you to please cast your vote.
Now, if you remember that video, it's called, there's a Representative John Haller, a Republican from Pennsylvania, 12th District. And there's a graphic tag across the top that says live, a graphic tag at the bottom with his name. And then under that, there's an onion logo dash span, S-P-A-N, mocking C-SPAN. And if you don't know, The Onion is a comedy outlet where they take quasi-real events and make fun of them, completely spoof up, you know, political speeches, things like that. And that's all well and good. And I remember when this video first hit the internet, it was back in 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. Man, it went through the truth community like wildfire. And I have myself, and this isn't the one I just played for you, but I've seen this without the tag at the top or the bottom. It's just a guy speaking in the House of Congress, and it looks pretty convincing. You know, there's no laugh track or yucking it up. And so, you know, everybody was like, oh, wow, you know, just freaking out. Well, then later versions of this video, I've seen the C-SPAN logo down there. And also the Onion Span logo down there. So I've seen a copy of this with nothing on it. One that says it's C-SPAN. One that says it's Onion Span. And so then the debate was on. Is this real? Is the Onion just playing with people? Did it really happen? And then they tagged that up there separate to discredit it. You know, who knows? But then you had also, if you'll remember, at that very same time, Congress went, I believe it was only the sixth or seventh time in its history, into a completely secret session.
Vietnam. We today are in Silver Spring, Maryland for Winter Soldier, for the testimony, for the accounts of Iraq and Afghanistan soldiers and veterans who've come to talk about their own experiences. Congressman Dennis Kucinich joins us right now, though. The Ohio congressmember, former presidential candidate, has just come from Washington, where he refused last night to attend a secret session of Congress. Welcome to Democracy Now.
Thank you, Amy. I also, yesterday on the floor of the House, spoke in support of the Winter Soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan, and what they're doing, I think, is so important here in Silver Spring.
Well, talk about what happened. Only the sixth time in history did Congress, in a sense, go dark. C-SPAN went black, the screen.
Right. Well, one of the Republican leaders said that he had some secret information that he had to communicate with the rest of Congress. And so he asked the Congress to go into secret session. I went to the floor of the House in that preliminary session and pointed out that this hasn't happened but five times in 182 years. And I said that there should be a very high bar that has to be passed before we go into secret session. As soon as I said that, the member of Congress who asked for it started to backpedal a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what kind of gravity came out of that meeting. My guess is that it had more to do with the desire of the administration to try to push for the passage of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act than it had to do with any compelling new information about national security.
The president and the Republicans wanting to push through legislation that would grant immunity to the telecom companies for spying on Americans?
Well, that's part of it, of course. But I'm thinking that yesterday there really was an attempt to try to basically use the procedure of a secret meeting to ratchet up the pressure to pass FISA. And by essentially the Democrats called the bluff of the Republicans. And we'll see if anything was produced in that meeting, because actually at any time Congress can vote to release the transcripts and make them public. And if that happens and it wasn't a serious enough matter, there could be really extreme political repercussions, because we shouldn't be going into secret session. I mean, there's a reason why you don't. You have a House of Representatives, the people's house. Transparency, it's essential for a democracy. It's very dangerous to have these
explain
things.
How it works. 7:30, they sweep the Congress, all the members, to make sure you have no wires on you.
Right. Well, everyone asked. You know, I haven't been in one of these for years. I do not sign the pledge of, quote, confidentiality, unquote, because what you essentially do is you give up your conscience. And when you go into these meetings, if something's being told that's a lie, you can't go outside and say they lied to you. But I will tell you this, Amy, that in the times that I went to these, when I was an early member of Congress, I'd go to these sessions. And, you know, they were lying to members, and then you would be told this information. They try to propagandize the members. You can't go outside and talk about it because you'd be violating the confidentiality. I just stopped going to them because I realized that they were attempting to try to spin the members of Congress under the pretext of a national security secret. Now, I think democracy functions much better in sunlight than in the dark.
Well, Congressman Kucinich, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. We're spending the hour with soldiers, with veterans who've come here to the National Labor College to talk about their own experiences. Again, this against the backdrop, the surprise last night of the secret session.
Well, you know, they're telling their stories about a war that's based on lies and the war that was concocted in secret.
Can I ask you a quick question? In this presidential year, you were a presidential candidate, big debate over Michigan and Florida. Your name, together with Hillary Clinton's name, was on the Michigan ballot. What is your take on what should happen there and why Barack Obama, John Edwards did not have their name on the ballots then and what should happen now?
Well you know, I basically, you know, ignored the directive of the party leaders.
And so did Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, right. And so I think, you know, this is something that's going to have to be worked out. I mean, the Democratic Party is going through a very dangerous period right now. Keeping that party together so it can be competitive in November is going to be a great challenge. And so both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have a lot of work to do.
Are you going to endorse someone?
I reserve the right to do that. I haven't made any decision yet.
Congressman Kucinich, thanks very much for joining us. The congressman from Ohio has just won his Democratic primary in Ohio. He's here at the Winter Soldier hearings that are taking place in Silver Spring, Maryland. Stay with us.
And that was Representative Dennis Kucinich, like it said there. He's speaking about the secret Congress meeting. That's a Democracy Now! Clip. If you get on any search engine, look for Democracy Now! Representative Kucinich and secret Congress meeting, you'll find several versions of that. Now, that doesn't prove one way or another that the C-SPAN, Onion Span video was real or fake. But the people who argue that secret session really happened, somebody leaked the video, the first one we played, you know, so you could, it's pretty verifiable that meeting took place. But then did the first video we played, was that real and leaked and then tagged as an Onion video afterwards to throw people off? Here, let's play another one. This is Representative Doggett reacting to the same secret session.
Without objection, gentleman's recognized.
Mr. Speaker, recent proceedings in this House served one and only one valuable public purpose. Hopefully, this totally unproductive exercise will assure that the Democratic leadership never again yields to demands that the public business of this people's House be conducted in secret. Linking secrecy and political power is a dangerous recipe. Accountability often ends where secrecy begins. Yes, there are always those whose self-importance grows when they participate in mysterious hocus-pocus, who insist that their judgment is superior to ordinary mortals because they possess confidential information not available to mere citizens. Rarely is that true. It was not true before the costly and troubling invasion of Iraq, and it is not true now. I yield back.
And that, again, was U.S. Congressman Lloyd Doggett. He's a Democrat from Texas, speaking out against conducting secret sessions in the House of Representatives. So there you have two pretty verifiable pieces of video about this secret session in Congress. And who knows what they're doing behind closed doors? You know, obviously, that in a free, like JFK said, secrecy, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. You know, if they're having secret meetings and secret sessions on our behalf, you know, they're supposed to work for us, but obviously they're not. They do things behind the scenes, and then did somebody with a conscience leak that first video and the aftermath was to cover it up? You know, who knows? So I think we can pretty well verify there was a secret session in Congress. Then it makes you wonder, did somebody leak somebody speaking about all the classified shenanigans going on? And then after that, do a little bit to, you know, cover it up, misdirect people, add confusion into the mix. These are all good questions, and that's, I think, a real good example of real video and fake video and or real video disguised as fake video. You know, that first clip could very well be an actual speech on the floor of Congress in a secret session that, you know, got leaked. Then again, it could be completely fake. The bigger question is, while we argue over what video is real and what isn't, there was a secret session in Congress. And I think that's the bigger point to this particular video, is to not get distracted by opinions and directions, but to just take in evidence, keep collecting, and we can weigh and balance it off each other, you know, as we continue to educate ourselves and delve deeper into the truth movement. All right, we're going to go over another example next. If you listened to a few shows back, I played a Suicide Number 148, the audio documentaries I make, where the school children in the elementary school Bush was visiting on the morning of 9/11 are practicing a reading lesson for the president and all these cameras, and they're apparently chanting "kite plane must hit steel."
Get ready to read all these words on this page without making a mistake. Look at the letter at the end and remember the sound it makes. Get ready.
Kite.
Yes, kite. Get ready to read this word the fast way. Get ready.
Kite.
Yes, kite. Sound it out. Get ready.
Kite.
Sound it out. Get ready.
Kite.
What word?
Kite.
Yes, kite. Boys and girls, sound this word out. Get ready.
Steel.
What word?
Steel.
Yes, steel. Read these words the fast way. Get ready.
Play.
Yes, play. Get ready.
Must.
Yes, must. Let's read these words the fast way without making a mistake. Get ready.
Kite.
Yes, kite. Get ready.
Kit.
Yes, kit. Get ready.
Steel.
Yes, steel. Get ready.
Plane.
Yes, plane. Get ready.
Must.
Yes, must. Go to your speaker reader up from under your seat. Open your book up to lesson 60 on page 153. Count of three, everyone on page 153. If the yellow paper is going to bother you, drop it. Thank you. Everybody touch the title of your story. Fingers under the title. Get ready to read the title, The Fast Way. We're waiting for one member. Thank you. Fingers under the title of the story. Get ready.
The pet go.
Yes, the pet go.
In that video again, the title of it is 9/11 kite dash plane dash must dash hit dash steal. And I got lots of feedback saying, oh, you know, the video is fake. How can you trust it? It's blurry. And I'll agree, it's a lower quality video. But, you know, I think the bigger picture is as follows. And I'm going to read some comments I put on my YouTube channel to some people who are discussing the validity of the video. I wrote, I am a radical skeptic. I agree the video isn't the best. Do you agree that the book being read at the very end is My Pet Goat? That part is verified. Have you heard W wax poetically about the cult of evil that is behind the terrorists? What about Skull and Bones? What about starting two wars without just cause? What about stealing elections, thereby undermining the whole point of a free country? Listen to that audio by itself with your eyes closed. Do we think someone got a teacher and a bunch of kids and a bunch of people to take pictures in the background, record that, then lay it over poor quality video, mis-synced, just to play games with us? Anything is possible. Experience is the ultimate truth. Everything else is food for thought to weigh against reality. Can you prove all of the Building 7 collapse videos are real? Can anyone prove any video is real? Only if one was there, also. I don't believe this video. I don't not believe this video. I take it in as information to be weighed against reality. Don't forget, the root word of revelations is to reveal, and the apocalypse simply means an unmasking or an uncovering. Do you ever notice things like this are never conclusive? 9/11 videos. Are there planes or no planes? The Zapruder film. That driver have a gun or did he not have a gun? The Apollo missions. Were they real or fake? You see, the planners, in quotes, always build in a choose-your-own-adventure aspect to each of their operations. Was it the Cubans, the mob, the commies, the CIA, or a lone nutter that did JFK? Part of the plan is to leave rabbit trails. A true skeptic takes in all information before judging. Now let me ask you, are you 100% positive it's fake? I didn't take or fake this video. I've just seen it and wanted to add it to the list of stuff that is possible. I think there is a preponderance of evidence pointing in the direction of Bush being a Luciferian blank. My initial take, without 100% proof, is that this movie is real. With the president and the Secret Service in one room, anyone in there with a video camera is with them. The fact that this clip made it to YouTube is only by their choosing. Most often when they release something, like I mentioned, they release it to mess with us. Real or fake, it came from them. I am merely presenting a large scope for many sources of stuff that is out there for people to chew on and ask questions. And I think that describes it pretty well, because now we need to realize that there's a preponderance of video documents that can lead you in either direction. So you can't believe one or not believe one. You need to keep it in your memory bank and just keep compiling information. And then once you come across something that you can verify to be true, you know, add the other information to it or subtract from it. Now, here's another version of that same video, and the kids seem to be saying something slightly different. It sounds like they're saying kite, and then kit, not hit, then playing, P-L-A-Y-I-N-G, not playing, steal, and must. Now, the only two differences in these videos is kit and playing instead of hit and playing. But then you have to ask yourself, what's really the difference? If you're chanting in secret a satanic ritual, kite, playing, must, hit, steal, or kite, playing, must, kit, steal, I think the enunciation is the secondary point, and the frequency and intention is the main point.
Get ready to read all these words on this page without making a mistake. Look at the letter at the end and remember the sound it makes. Get ready.
Kite.
Yes, kite. Get ready to read this word the fast way. Get ready.
Kit.
Yes, kit. Sound it out. Get ready.
Kit.
Sound it out. Get ready.
Kit.
What word?
Kit.
Yes, kit. Boys and girls, sound this word out. Get ready.
Steal.
What word?
Steal.
Yes, steal. Read these words the fast way. Get ready.
Playing.
Yes, playing. Get ready.
Must.
Yes, must. Let's read these words the fast way without making a mistake. Get ready.
Kite.
Yes, kite. Get ready.
Kit.
Yes, kit. Get ready.
Steal.
Yes, steal. Get ready.
Playing.
Yes, playing. Get ready.
Must.
Yes, must. Boys and girls, pick your reader up from under your seat.
Next, I want to play you a clip of one of the most famous videos ever. And let's consider, is this real or fake?
One of the major pieces of evidence in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, an 8mm home movie taken by a local businessman named Abraham Zapruder. The Zapruder film was featured in Life magazine and became a focal point in the Warren Commission investigation. Does the Zapruder film we see today accurately represent the true events of November 22, 1963? Or has it been altered, as many researchers have suggested? In the following analysis, we shall attempt to find out. As you watch the film, you can see how the random motion of the camera makes analysis of the events difficult. Our first step is to remove as much of this extra motion as possible to focus solely on the movement of the limousine and the people in the scene. You can see that once the limousine is stabilized, it is easier to follow the movement of the people in the car and on the lawn. Previous researchers have stabilized the limousine as well to focus solely on the actions of Kennedy in the car. Now we're going to do something different. The first bystanders we see on the lawn seem to be looking not at the limousine which is passing them, but behind it, as if it has not reached them yet. This odd reaction would seem to support the idea that the background action is out of sync with the limousine. Let's take a look at the way separate layers could be combined in a 1963-era film using either an optical printer or an animation stand. Both use the same principle. The background bystanders on the lawn would need to be separated by masking out the limousine. This would leave a blank area in the foreground. In order to retime the background without this blank area showing, the background could be enlarged and reframed to create an overlap area. Then, the limousine layer, with the background masked out, could overlap this new background and be retimed and positioned independently, allowing its speed to be controlled as well. These layers joined together form what is called a composite. A jitter could then be applied to this composite to create the final effect. It has been argued by John Costella, Ph.D., that the Stemmons Freeway sign which passes in front of the limousine has been fabricated. His detailed analysis shows how the sign does not exhibit the same lens distortion or align in perspective with other objects in the scene. If the sign were a separate layer on top of the limousine, this would be the perfect way to cover the change between real and retimed footage. We also see Mary Mormon standing with her friend in the red coat, clearly on the lawn, when according to her testimony, she stepped forward onto the street when she took her picture as Kennedy was shot. If the lawn footage has been retimed, we may actually be seeing an earlier moment before she stepped forward. Another unsettling aspect to the bystanders is their unusually large size in relation to their distance from the limousine and its occupants, as if the entire background had been blown up. This again supports the theory that the background layer has been resized separately. As the car passes the last couple on the lawn, the man's legs go from a position of standing feet together to standing wide apart in one frame. That's an 1/18 of a second, which is a near physical impossibility, not to mention strange. It is, however, the logical point to cut from the retimed background back to real footage as the car speeds away. Here's an example of bystanders showing motion blur. Notice their shadows on the lawn are also blurry, as they naturally would be. However, just a few frames later, we see this. The bystanders are even more blurred, yet their shadows are impossibly sharp. This is a clear example of retouching, and further proof that the background has been altered. Although the lamppost passes in front of the limousine, it exhibits no movement in relation to the far background, as it should, being an object much closer in three-dimensional space to the panning camera. It also displays an odd, blurred extension on its lower left side where it passes in front of the limousine, giving the lamppost an artificial cutout appearance. This further supports the theory that the limousine layer has been separated from the background lawn. Therefore, the lamppost would need to be cut out as well to overlay the limousine. Inconsistencies regarding the actions of the people in the limousine have been a point of discussion among researchers. For example, the driver turns his head twice to look behind and then forward faster than physically possible, which seems to indicate removed frames. The head turns correspond to two points at which the passengers lurch forward as if the car has braked suddenly, although the car shows only gradual slowing compared to the background. The second of these breaks seems to be strong enough to throw Connolly and his wife completely to the floor of the car, and the driver and front passenger forward as well. These examples alone point to significant retiming of the limousine speed. The sprocket hole area on the left side of the frame reveals an interesting clue when the motorcycle officer momentarily pulls up from behind the limousine at the same time as the second passenger lurch. This seems to indicate either the motorcycle suddenly sped up, or, more likely, the limousine suddenly braked, and the officer was not prepared for it and braked later, having the effect of pulling up alongside the limousine. Yet, the film does not seem to show the limousine slowing or stopping, again supporting the theory that the timing has been altered. This brings us to our final question. Why would someone do this? As mentioned before, the passengers in the limousine lunge forward at one point as if the car has braked suddenly. Many witnesses at the time testified that they saw the limousine slow or stop at the time Kennedy received the fatal headshot. Imagine the outcome of the Warren Commission investigation if they had seen a film in 1963 showing the Secret Service driver bringing the presidential limousine to a complete stop, after shots had been fired, to allow the assassin a clear, unmoving target for the fatal headshot. Who would they investigate then? A lone gunman? We began this presentation asking the question, does the Zapruder film today accurately represent the true events of November 22, 1963? Our answer is no. Let's review our findings. The pasted freeway sign, the large bystanders, the painted shadows, the cutout lamppost, the lurching passengers, the braking motorcycle. Once you have seen this evidence, it's difficult to watch the Zapruder film and see it as anything but a fabrication. Those who created it never wanted us to see even this much, but now it is too late. We know that the film was altered and retimed before the public saw it, most likely to hide the stopping of the limousine. Once this fact is accepted, an enormous house of cards begins to fall. If the Secret Service driving the limousine was involved, who else was involved? If the Secret Service, FBI, or CIA, who all had possession of the original Zapruder film, were involved in its alteration, what does that mean? If Time Life, which immediately bought the rights to the film and then refused to show it for decades, was involved, what does that mean? If the Warren Commission based their report on the timeline of a false Zapruder film, what does that mean?
And again, the title of that one on YouTube is JFK Assassination Film Fake. So you see, the biggest piece of video evidence ever presented in conspiracy land or the truth movement isn't even fully verifiable. So you never know what you're seeing. And so before we all use video evidence as a divide and conquer mechanism to either join one side or the other and then fight with each other about whether this is real or fake, you're never really sure, like I said, unless you were there and or you videotaped it. That's the only 100% truth. Everything else is a sliding scale of possible or impossible. So we need to not fully believe video evidence anymore, but now, or not believe it, now we need to keep adding it together until you get a clearer picture and not ever rest your laurels or your beliefs or ideas on one thing you've seen. And another thing to consider, as we're learning more evidence about 9/11, you could be seeing something new and trying to overlay it on a previous experience. For example, when the towers are, in quotes, collapsing, it appears as though they're exploding. But the analogy I've used many times is when water turns into steam, it appears to be exploding also, but it's particle dissociation. The water molecules are turning into steam molecules, and there's a transformation in between that looks explosive. Well, most of us can agree to that and have seen that, and that's not a foreign concept. If you are able to use directed energy to basically turn concrete into concrete steam, that looks explosive. And since we've never seen concrete turn into concrete steam, that particle dissociation, we automatically assume that it's a bomb and it's exploding, but that's not necessarily the case. So we also need to consider the fact that if you're seeing a brand new piece of video or something that you've never seen before, don't automatically assume that it relates to something you've seen. There may be more to the story. So we need to slow down, go back to our radical skeptic roots, use discernment, collect evidence empirically, and not get emotionally charged one way or another, because that's what a lot, you know, video is emotionally charging. You know, we're so desensitized to it But if we consider the possibility that, so much of the media is a mind game, that we need to take our emotions out now as we move through the truth movement and gather discernment and build our empirical powers, understand that video can be faked, real video can be altered to appear fake, real video can be given a spin to make you think you didn't see what you saw. You know, there's now a range of possibilities in video. It's not 100% true. It's not 100% fake. Lots of these are going to fall in between somewhere. And we need to be extra cautious as we move through empirically our lives and not totally rest our laurels on video. Or if you swear by a piece of video you've seen, unless you took it yourself, you're not really positive because you could be seeing something other than what you thought. And since this is a fantastic Friday, I would like to play for you just the very first piece of a series on YouTube called The Real Stargate, Project Looking Glass. This is a series of videos done with Dr. Dan Burisch, who is a retired former worker at Groom Lake. He speaks about the extraterrestrial presence on planet Earth right now and how our military intelligence groups have obtained Stargate technology, which he has worked with. He was part of the infamous group Majestic. He worked with ETs dubbed J-Rods, and he also says that their skins are polyneuropathy type substance, and that they were a type of an amphibious being. Say that real fast. He goes into a great detail about their anatomy, internal and external. This is truly heroic speech that is a must watch for all humanity. If you do not buy or believe a statement given to Mr. Burisch, then I urge you, all of you naysayers, or simply you individuals who are curious but are believers, I have found that all of his statements are fact. You must do your own homework for your own satisfaction. Stay open-minded. This is truly important. It is performed by the wonderful people at Project Camelot, and then it just goes on. And aside from the ET stuff, I just want to introduce now, after we've discussed the possibility of video being real or faked, the looking glass technology. Because we also need to consider that since we have a pretty good belief or assumption or empirically collected evidence that the dark ones have technology we don't know about, can you film the future? Can you film the past? Is what we're seeing on the screen even the present moment? And again, I'm not saying this is true. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just asking you to consider the fact, since we know the dark ones have an unlimited money supply, they've been on top of stealing and integrating technology from ancient times to present times for a long time. They also have contacts and ideas that we can't really get a grip on, but we just still need to consider the possibility that there's another piece of information when it comes to video that we may or may not have considered yet. So again, this is The Real Stargate, Project Looking Glass. This is just a little bit of the first part. We'll end the show with it today. I thank you for joining us on this Friday, episode 14 of the Next Step Radio Show. My name is Jacob Appleman. Email is thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. Website, www.infowarts.com. infowarts.com. Head over to animatterradio.com. Subscribe for Jeff's show. He's breaking some new ground, putting some really good ideas out there into our ocean of consciousness. And together, as we move forward, you know, we might just get a better grip on what truth really is. Our musical guest today that introduced the show, and we'll follow this last clip. It's an electric violin and a beatbox jam. Jason Yang violin. The jam is a rendition of Organ Donor, made famous by DJ Shadow. It was recorded live. Jason Yang on the electric violin, Jake Moulton beatboxing. Hope you enjoyed the show today. We'll see you back here on Monday with the brand new episode of the Next Step Radio Show.
How would you like to start? What's the best place to start as far as Stargates are?
I've got a list of questions
Okay. Here
in front of me, submitted by you two, all 30 of them. And, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned the number.
No.
They are decommissioned. They are separated into their three components. There's a projection component, a ring component, and also a barrel component to the both the Stargate devices as well as the looking glass device. The Stargates also have field posts, and again, I'm not a physicist, so I wouldn't be the appropriate one to make comment as to how they work. But there were field posts that were positioned around the actual gates, and they have been stored, I guess. I'm not certain what happened to the field components, but of the three components, they've actually been decommissioned and liaisons to the European Union, the United Nations, and NATO are actually in possession of them, and there is no one group which has the other one of the other two components.
So
everybody's actually staring at everybody, and they can't put the equipment together because everybody is mutually dependent and looking questioningly at everybody else. So everybody is literally protecting everybody else. Of the actual base operating equipment, there are three components to it, which is a projection device of some sort, a barrel, and a set of rings, electromagnetic rings.
Are we able to know how many man-made Stargates there were on the planet?
No. Okay. I'm not going to comment as to the total. I will say that there was over 50.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. In different countries of the world?
Yes.
Okay, and these are man-made?
Yes.
Okay, so, and now these are Stargates.
Well, see, it's not a Stargate. It's a device which accesses.
Okay,
which
right.
accesses a portal, a wormhole,
or
does
it access a natural? In other words, the man-made device
yes.
accesses a natural Stargate.
It draws off from a natural ERB, an Einstein-Rosen bridge.
Okay.
It accesses it and somehow works, from what I understand, not in parallel, but almost like piggybacks on the energy of the natural Stargate. Yeah.
Okay. So, in other words, if there were 50 man-made devices mm-hmm. accessing. They would be accessing a corresponding 50 natural energy vortexes.
That I don't know. There's okay. a possibility, in fact, that when the looking glass was operated, they were usually worked in tandem. It required a second looking glass to be turned on at the same time to get acoustics through. So unless a second one was turned on, which was operated at one of the places where Will Uhouse had been. He saw the second node location as opposed to the first node being over at the Papoose facility. Two pieces of equipment, two looking glasses, were required to be turned on at the same time to be able to hear acoustics or sound, if you will, from whatever the people were watching, but to go to piggyback in tandem with the visual response of the equipment. That it required two to be turned on to hear anything. And then both sides could hear the same thing. So I suppose both of the looking glasses being tuned to the same thing was accessing the same tunnel, if you will, to the information.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was wondering. Okay, so the looking glass has an ability to show one the future, but a Stargate or equipment that accesses a Stargate mm-hmm. or wormhole is for time travel, right? We're talking about two different things.
Yes.
Are they using the same technology?
Essentially, yes. The original device was the Stargate device. That was then increased in power, if you will, with the use of these field posts. And how it pumped up the power, how it stabilized it, I don't know. You'd need to speak with a physicist about that.
Okay, and however, it increased it enough to where it became a looking glass?
Well, no.
The abilities of a looking glass?
No, no. It would be pumped up in power to stabilize the doorway, if you will, to step through into another location,
right.
Which, in essence, because distance and time are relative, the same thing, step two into another time. The looking glass device was a back-engineered Stargate.
Okay.
So it was actually back-engineered from the original cylinder seal data, which right. allowed us to produce the Stargate access devices, if you will, what we call the Stargates.
Hmm.
It's a back-engineered device, the looking glass is. So looking glass is a secondary device, and it was coming into its fore in the 60s and 70s. And Will saw one of the first generations of it. From what I understand, very large piece of equipment. They always get smaller no matter what. I mean, look at what's happened with the computers.
Will saw?
Oh, yeah.
Will.
Yeah, Will Uhouse.
Uhouse saw the original looking glass.
He saw one of the original looking glasses demonstrated, and in fact, it's going to be in the DVD that we're getting ready to put out, the actual interview, where he was indicating the firing of a bullet, I believe it was, through an object. And there was a time delay where the bullet actually passed through the object, where he saw the bullet pass the object, or the projectile, if you will, a rail gun, I believe, is what was being...
Gun.
Yeah, it was a rail gun that was being used. And then afterward, they saw the impact of the device. So they were already playing with it in the early to mid 70s with dealing with time sequences.
Wasn't the original looking glass a back engineered from alien technology?
Yes.
Okay. But it also there was information around the cylinder seals
mm-hmm.
that they used as also, and that those cylinder seals also came from an off-world race. Is that
No, the cylinder seals didn't. The information on them
on
did.
On them came from. Which was maybe the Anunnaki? Is that
I wouldn't feel comfortable in characterizing it.
Okay.
With that name.
Okay.
Shouldn't go.
But it was off-world technology originally.